You know, it's a little different being a gardener in the winter or this time of the year. You don't have to be out there in the heat dealing with mosquitoes. Instead, you can enjoy thinking about what went well in the garden last year, and you can start planning for this year's growing season, and you can even give some plants a head start indoors. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Pleased to have back Lisa Johnson. Lisa, the UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County, specializes in horticulture education for home gardeners. She works with the Master Gardener Program. And Lisa, as always, great to have you with us today. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks, Larry.
Really appreciate it. And, you know, thinking about the different things that gardeners can do or homeowners can do this time of the year, certainly the first thing that comes to mind is pruning.
Right. Yeah, it's a great time of year to do your pruning. For one thing, you don't have leaves waving around in your face, so you can better see the structure of the plant that you're pruning. And also, you don't have to worry about a lot of the insects and diseases that are prevalent during the growing season. So this is the time of year that we recommend, particularly for things like oaks, that you want to keep away from oak wilt and elms, American elms, that we want to do our pruning during the dormant season.
And pruning is, for a lot of things, really necessary, isn't it?
Yeah, particularly for fruit trees. If you want to have a good bearing tree, it's really necessary to make sure that you do some proper pruning to keep it thinned out and to keep the branches strong so that they can bear the weight of the fruit. And particularly if you have a regular-sized or standard-sized tree that grows real fast, those are pretty vigorous.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking back to, now this is a few years back, I'd say probably about 7-8 years back, previous home, I was doing some pruning on one of the trees, and I had to be up and on a ladder, and I had to be in an awkward position with the saw.
This is not sounding good.
And I was a big enough limb, and I, you know, sat there and I got it off, and nothing, you know, I did it safely, I guess. But the thing was, my arm was sore for like 4 or 5 days. I mean, really sore.
Yeah.
And I thought, why didn't I have Bruce Allison or somebody come over and do the work for me? You know, and it's a good question. When do you get a professional?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew what I was doing, but
yeah, we usually recommend that if the limbs are, you know, off the ground to a point that you do have to use a ladder, and particularly if they're more than 2 or 3 inches in diameter, that's arborist territory there. And, you know, they have climbing gear if they need it, and they know how to make the proper cuts, and they have crews that can help lower limbs down to the ground. So always recommend safety first.
Yeah, I wish I had, I can still feel that in my arm. By the way, I should give the phone number. You can join in if you have a question or comment. Enough about talking about my pruning abilities. The number for you to call with your gardening question, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments there, and we certainly would love to hear from you. We have, and I think we already have some Facebook questions up. I'm going to have to take a look. I'm almost positive. I know there is one about starting seeds indoors, and we talked about that on a recent show quite a bit, but always good to get another perspective on it as well. What are some of the basics to keep in mind for starting seeds?
For starting seeds?
Yeah.
Most of the seeds, at least in southern Wisconsin, we're going to be starting around the middle of March. As you get, you know, further up the state, you may want to move that deadline up a little bit because you want to make sure that you have your seeds ready to go by whenever the so-called last frost date is in your area. So for us in the Madison area, that's May 15th. You want to make sure that you have a seed starting mix that usually one of the commercial ones that are soilless, that drain well but also hold moisture. You want to make sure you have appropriate lighting and that the temperature is appropriate. Yeah. If it gets too cold, you can lose your seeds really quickly. Keeping up on the moisture requirements is also important.
Well, lots of things to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Bob in Vernon County has something for us. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for being on the radio. I have a 5-acre field that has not been cropped in over 8-9 years. It's pretty much just, you know, natural weeds. I cut out, if ever there's like a tree or a thick bush starting, I just chainsaw or cut those out.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot afford to do the beautiful full prairie restoration because of that's just way too expensive. And I can't, like, I don't have running water, so I'm not going to, like, burn it. So I do mow the perimeter, and I'm wondering if there's any options for me. Should I try to mow the entire field periodically and watch grasses come up or just leave the weeds the way they are?
Boy, that's a tough one. Do you have a riding mower or something?
Well, I could pay one of my neighbors who are real farmers. They could come in with a brush hog and cut it, and then I could try, you know, I use a kind of a big riding mower with a pull behind 5-foot mower for the perimeter.
I could
just try to do the whole field maybe twice a year, maybe 3 times a year, something
okay.
like that.
What kind of weeds do you have in there? Are they thistles or?
Oh, they're just all those pretty ones like Queen Anne's lace. There's like, I don't know, a lot of ragweed, goldenrod.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have any of the, you know, like I have people. There's people elsewhere in the county. They burn and then they do the whole like prairie seed.
Yeah.
From, they buy it. I can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I guess it depends on, you know, what your end plans are for that space. Are you ever going to crop it again?
No.
Okay.
Unless somebody wanted. I mean, it's good. It's organic now because nothing's been done to it
for
so long. But, you know.
I guess if you're not.
I don't know, right now, I walk through it and my dog's running it and, you know.
As long as you don't have, like, wild parsnip in it, you know, that could be a problem for you and your dogs, thistle that could be an issue. If you don't mind, you know, having that seed bank of weed seeds, I'd say just keep mowing the perimeter. That's probably the cheapest thing to do.
Okay.
And, you know, less work for you.
I suppose if you...
Go ahead. If I did mow it more often, if I did mow the whole field like twice a year or three times, whatever, would it turn into being more like tall grasses?
No. No, it's going to stay weeds.
Okay.
You might.
Stay weeds. Okay.
You might. What you might do is just go online to a place like Prairie Nursery.
Mm-hmm.
Because he does have, for example, and others do as well, information about mowing. And mowing an area,
yeah.
And it'd be well worth it to read what he's got to say there, and as a matter of fact, Neil DeBull, Judith just reminded me, is going to be on the show on March 6th.
Oh,
so you might hang on.
Okay.
There's plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be doing anything right now, so keep that in mind, Bob, and give a call on March 6th, and let's see what Neil's got to say.
Yeah, there may be some prairie grass seeding that you can do even without the water if you do it at the appropriate time of year.
And doing it at the appropriate time of the year might also, if there may be some very good plants in there, but they're being kind of choked out and So there may be some real benefit to mowing at the proper time.
Yeah, and if you do some seeding to seeding something, outcompete some of the weeds. But yeah, it's really tough when you have tall weeds to get stuff to germinate.
So keep that, mark that on your calendar, March 6th, then Neil will be back and we can talk some more about it. And I'm sure there are other people that have exactly that same question, Bob. So it's a good one. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Sally in Madison has a question for us.
And I'm so happy you're on the air. I am calling because I have actually two questions.
Okay.
The first is about my little sunburn arborvita by the house. The first year that so many trees were sun or snowburned, whatever the word is.
Winterburn, and, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You recall that year.
Yes, indeed.
we were told not to trim off that branch, prune it, because maybe something would happen. So I have these beautiful multicolored arborvitae.
Oh, yeah. I think the recommendation was to
wait a few months, but yeah.
But then go ahead and cut if it...
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, so I can prune it right now very happily, right?
No, I would not prune it right now. I would wait until the growing season, and the reason for that is because that dead tissue is still providing some measure of protection for any buds that might be in there.
Sure.
And so, you know, by thinning it out right now, you might make it even more prone to winter burn. And I'm kind of wondering what's going to happen in terms of winter burn this year, because we had, you remember that really cold snap in November before we had before we had a good snow cover, and then it got really warm and those evergreens started respiring again and coming out of dormancy, and then it got really cold again. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that this year.
Okay, and my other question was a seedling question for parsley. Other seedlings grow just fine, but the parsley from store-bought seeds just doesn't make it to the point of being parsley for the salad. And I wondered if there was a particular either type of parsley, or if they're particularly difficult to move from being seedlings to being planted in the ground, if you have any comments about that.
Okay.
What kind are you growing? The regular Italian crispy parsley? Yeah,
shouldn't be any problem.
Yeah, did you start it inside or start it outside?
Well, every year it started inside.
Okay, and they do have a taproot, but maybe trying some direct seeding in a pot or something outside and or
later then.
right. That maybe that would help, or start with a store-bought transplant instead of seeds if you're having problems with the seeds.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea either. Thanks a lot, Sally.
They're inexpensive, so
they're not that expensive. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, Joel Karsten joins us to talk about the straw bale gardening method. Every time Joel is on, he is just flooded with calls. If you haven't heard of it, I think you're really going to find it interesting. And if you're already using it, perfect opportunity to get your questions answered. That's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, though, talking with UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County, Lisa Johnson, and having a great time covering the gamut of questions, I think, Lisa. Pretty much covering it all. And if you haven't covered it all, you have a course that people are going to be able to take and get every single question answered in some way or another.
Yeah, we've got this new course that we're offering for the public called Garden Basics and Beyond. And it's actually, I don't want people to think that it's only basics. It's actually similar in content, at least in part, to the Master Gardener Volunteer Program, except that there's no volunteer component for this. So this is a short course that's on Tuesday nights that starts March 3rd and ends April 14th. We're going to be covering soils and composting, plant propagation, tree planting, pruning and selection, native plants for gardens and pollinators, vegetables, annuals and perennials, and weeds and wildlife. And we'll have some of our university specialists coming in. I'll be teaching some of it, my colleague Joe Mullenberg and Claire Strader from our office.
Boy, that sounds great. So yeah. It's every Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Starting March?
March 3rd.
3rd.
6 to 8:30 p.m. at the Dane County Extension Office. If you want to know more about it, you can visit our website. You can just Google Dane County UWEX and go to the horticulture tab, and Garden Basics will come right up.
So you're thinking here, looking at least, what is it, 14, 16, 18, 20 hours or so?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's $130, or you can take up to four of the classes for $99.
Oh, so really great opportunity here. And, of course, you're going to have other experts as well as yourself, plus mm-hmm. there are going to be visual things that you're going to have things there for people to actually hold and look at.
Right, exactly. And there will be a number of different handouts that we're giving as well. And light refreshments, too.
Light refreshments as well. Good enough.
Always a good selling point.
No photos of me pruning.
No? Oh, I'm disappointed.
Oh, man. Well, it's a good thing you don't. Patty in Waterford, it's your turn. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I have some questions about starting seeds. I would love to be able to have some herbs during the wintertime, and I try to grow, say, basil. And I know the basis of seed starting, and I get the little sprouts going. I have a grow light. But I lose them to something. I'm not sure what, a fungus or dampening off. And I had them covered with plastic for a while. And then I take the plastic off. And then somewhere along the way, they never get bigger than little seedlings.
Okay. Are they sitting in water at all when you're watering?
Well, I'm wondering, is it a requirement that they be watered from underneath?
Can no.
You water them from above?
Yes.
I have a little mixer,
sure.
And I miss them.
No, you can. Oh, you missed them?
Yeah.
And then I cover them with plastic, and they all sprout properly. And then I'm not really sure when I should take the plastic off. Must I water them from below?
And no. Where's the light?
Yeah.
I have a grow light.
How far above the seedlings is it?
Not too far above.
Okay. Pretty it should be by. Like an inch or two. You can water your seedlings from above. It may be that if you're watering them from below, if they're sitting in water too long, that it may very well be dampening off, particularly if they topple over right at the base.
But you said an inch?
Yeah,
in terms of the
yeah,
light?
Yeah, the grow light's pretty close to them.
So it is an inch.
And they do look like they're toppling over. I think it might be dampening off, but even though I think I know what it is, I can't stop it from happening.
Yeah. You probably don't need the plastic on there for very long either, just until they start to come up. Are you reusing any of the same soil or the same trays?
No, and I washed the little pot in bleach, and...
Well, we're finding...
Potting soil?
Okay. Oh. I would use new pots because what they have found through research is that some of those organisms can survive even if they're the plastic has been bleached. So that's
You're
from
kidding,
Brian.
Even bleach?
Yeah, that Brian Huddleston told me that he's seen that happen before. So he would prefer that you just use new pots. Yeah, so that may be what's happening
and so
too.
So take the plastic off sooner. Do I need a heating mat once they're little seedlings?
It depends on what you've got and where you're doing it. I used to try growing seedlings in my basement, and it was just too cold down there for some of them. They just didn't do very well. So if you're trying to grow them in an area where it's like 55 to 60 degrees, some of the things like the peppers, basil, tomatoes that like it warm may not do too well. Mm. Or if you've got it close to a window where cold air comes in. So some of the cooler season things like lettuce, spinach, they aren't going to care about that. So it really depends on the species.
There you go. Good luck. Let us know what happens. Let's. hopefully things are going to work better.
Hopefully things are better.
This time around, Patty. Jerry and Rhinelander, your turn next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I've been growing my own seeds for my strawberry gardening for the last few years. And been doing, they've been coming up great and such. And I keep them in a room or, you know, in the house to where it's very open and such. And this year I'm going to have a special problem. And I was hoping that you'd have some suggestions. I will have a 7-month-old cat.
Oh, I have five cats, so I am a cat person, and I do understand your issue.
I have two cats.
Yes. I would get one of those plastic covers for your seedling flats. They call them domes or seed domes, even though they really aren't dome-shaped. Those are pretty sturdy plastic, and I would try and keep it somewhere, you know, above. I realize that cats can go almost anywhere. Is there any way that you can keep it in a room that has a door you can shut?
No, not at all.
Okay.
What about when they do get a few inches tall?
Yeah. Some of these seed domes will... they're up to, there are some that are like 2 or 3 inches tall, and then there's some that are 5 inches tall. Now, those aren't of the same thickness of plastic, so you might still have some issues with those.
One other thing that you might consider, I was thinking about, is sort of a scat mat. There's a there's a mat that you can, that gives a...
It's like a vibration, isn't
it? It's like a little shock.
Yeah.
It's not, it's like... you know, it's not going to hurt the, but the cat will know that he or she has touched it.
Yeah, I wonder if Patricia McConnell has run into this.
Well, actually, I can remember us talking about it on one of our shows on animal behavior, that it is something that, frankly, if the cat steps on it, they're not going to go back.
Yeah, right.
So,
other thing you can use is double-sided tape if you put it on some like wood slats or something around the perimeter.
And the other thing that I do is I have aluminum foil kind of crinkled up, and just set, they hate aluminum foil for some reason. I put it right in the pots.
Ah.
On limey, my lime tree's got aluminum foil in there because because otherwise Coco the cat will get in there and start digging around. So actually, if you can put some aluminum foil. That's a pretty cheap.
Yeah.
You know, crinkle it up a bit. They do not like it. And it doesn't look great. But you know what? You're going to have plants.
Yeah.
There you go, Jerry. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. The number for you to call, hey, we have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly again. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. And let's go to some cooler climes here in Wisconsin. Dwayne and Butternut. Hi, Dwayne.
Good morning, Larry, Lisa. Good morning to you guys.
Good morning.
Hey, listen, I have some issues going on with the strawberry patch that I put in a couple of years back. They seem to really bud real well for me in the springtime, you know, which is... pretty exciting, thinking I'm going to have me a nice batch of strawberries. And then the buds are gone, and so is everything else. I never seem to be able to get any strawberries off of my patch, and I don't understand what's going on with that. Soil seems to be good. One thing that I should tell you is that we started out with some wild strawberries just to put some of them in there because we had some in front of the house. And I told my wife, well, throw them back in there and we'll start with that. And I bought some other plants from various sources and put them in there too, maybe a year later. But I don't seem to get any strawberries anytime, but I do get some nice buds in the beginning of the year. So I'm wondering what can I do or what's going on there.
Well, it's, you know, butternut's a ways up there, but if there's wood frost.
Wild, yeah, but if the wild strawberries are bearing, did you say the wild ones are bearing?
Well, none of them are anymore. You know, they're in front of the house, and I had to move them because we were doing things to the front of the house. So I have a raised bed, and I have a raised bed dedicated just for the strawberries.
Boy.
And last year especially, I thought, well, maybe. Oh, I don't know, whatever.
It can take a year. Now, you say you get buds. So what happens to the buds? Do they dry up and fall off?
They're just gone. And I'm looking for something that's in there interfering with them, and nothing. I get the flowering, put it that way. Maybe my terminology isn't proper. I get the flowers. Nothing.
Okay. Do you see rabbit droppings at all in the bed?
We have rabbits, but I've been really paying attention. And last year I put mesh over the top of all that. Now, my bed's probably 3 foot wide by maybe 16 feet long.
Okay, so it's not rabbits. And Larry and I were kind of wondering about frost, whether that's zapping your buds.
Oh, they have no cold weather after I've had the flowering and stuff, so yeah. I really tried to put together here. I haven't gone as far as to take a sample to my local co-op to have it see what's going on. Maybe there's a problem with that, but if I get all the flowering and such, I don't think there is a problem. Other than I don't know. That's why I'm calling.
The only other thing I can think of is some kind of pollination issue if the flowers aren't getting pollinated, but you still should get some fruit.
You'd think you'd get something. You get nothing, right?
If you get nothing, that's really bizarre.
Strawberries on that old bed, and they're very small. And I thought about the pollination issue, too. Really, I don't see any bees in the backyard there, and I do have other fruit and vegetables and such, and I don't really see any kind of involvement with any kind of pollinators, you know, so maybe that's an issue.
Well, it sure could be
an
issue, but it's a hard one. I would actually get a soil sample. I mean, you might as well find out what the soil's like. Tell the people, if you go to the Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory and have them do it, maybe the co-op will do it too. If you say, okay, I'm raising strawberries on this, so keep that in mind when you do the analysis and tell me if, you know, the soil's right for strawberries. But heck, if it's flowering.
I thought maybe it might be a fertility issue. Are you fertilizing before they flower or after?
I actually did get some older manure from a farmer, a buddy of mine, and put that on the beds prior. I don't think it's an issue with that. And then I limed them in the fall of the year, a couple of years back, just a little bit of lime on that.
Up in butternut, that might be good needed.
Thing. Yeah, it'd be a good thing. Well, we're stumped.
We're stumped.
I think, you know, go ahead with a soil test, and, you know, if you've got, who's the horde agent there? Butternut. I'm trying to think.
Probably the closest is Kevin Shesso.
Kevin Shesso. You might just check, too, with the county extension office, the extension office in your county, and talk to either the horde agent or the ag agent there and see if there's other people have been having similar kinds of problems or if that he or she has actually seen that problem in that area. And I think that would be, you know, it's always that local experience often a big help. So go online, find the phone number for the for your county extension office and give that person a call and just see what you can come up with. I wish we had more help for you right now.
Yeah.
Duane.
Can't think of anything that we haven't covered.
But good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And lots of callers online. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email from Cody in Rock Falls says, I have some tamarack pine cones I collected from my dad's tree. I would like to know how to start them, then transplant them to my marshy area of my property. And that's another good question that we can look at. The ideas on that one?
I would have to look that. A lot of the conifers have fairly specialized needs in terms of germination. Some of them, like jack pine, have to go through a fire. Or you need to do special like stratification, wet and dry and different temperatures. So I have a book at my office that I would look that question up in, but I don't know off the top of my head how to, with tamarack particular.
We have a couple of different listeners have emailed to say that perhaps with the strawberry issue that Duane was having up in Butternut, that it could be chipmunks.
It could be. It's you
wouldn't notice them.
That eat flowers. I have seen voles do that occasionally, and
I like that chipmunk idea.
Yeah, that and voles might be able
and
to get
voles
through
would be
the
another one too.
They could get through the chicken wire.
Yep. Yeah. So something else to think about, Duane. Marvin and Menominee up next. Hi, Marvin. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. Good morning. Excellent show as usual, Larry.
Thank you.
I have, we have strawberries in our garden that we planted last year, and we didn't get a lot of yield, but they were new. But they're really spreading all over, and what are some tips for, like, pruning or culling or getting them ready in spring for this year's dairy time?
Okay. Well, when you uncover them in spring, you can do some removal at that point in time. Usually, if it's a new planting, getting rid of the most vigorous ones along the sides, might help. And, you know, you just dig them up basically.
Yeah.
Now once they start to get older, you might want to, and I'm talking 3 to 5 years down the line, you might want to start saving the ones that are on the edges and take out the older plants in the middle.
In the middle, yeah.
Yeah, that get less vigorous over time. But yes, strawberries do that. That's one of the things that they do is they do spread.
And Duane does not have that problem over in Butternut,
yeah,
I don't think.
Yeah,
that's good.
Are yours... flowering and fruiting okay for you?
Well, yes and no. We had a lot of creatures eating them.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah.
And I'm not sure if it was slugs or what, but do we need to put more ground cloth or something under them so that they don't get...
Straw works pretty well as a... or hay. Just to keep them up off the ground. If you do have a lot of problems with slugs, you might want to use some slug traps or slug bait if that's a big issue for you. If there are actual bites taken out of things, then it might be voles or chipmunks getting in there.
It could be one of the last two because there were a number of them where they would just eat like the ends off of the strawberry. Possibly those were.
Voles. Yeah, that could be voles or chipmunks.
And you could have both.
Yeah.
You could have both.
And you could have rabbits,
probably
too.
Probably have everything.
Yeah. Yay.
There you go, Marv.
Your pick. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And turning next to Dave in Dane County. Dave, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm calling in response to the previous guy who had a 5-acre field. And his dilemma saying he couldn't afford to install a prairie. This fall, I installed a prairie on a 5-acre field in Dane County. I went through the NRCS, and he would be very pleasantly surprised on the financial support he would get going through that route. Basically, they essentially pay for it because they're trying to address the honeybee issue. I have the pollinator
issue.
So I didn't have any choice, but it was 10 Forbes, 10 native prairie wildflowers, and then 2 short grass species. So that's something he may want to look into. I don't know what county he was from, but I would certainly explore that. And then I had another smaller area that I just continually mowed, and it, after about 2 years, it was just mostly grass. It almost looks like a lawn, although it doesn't have the same species.
Yeah,
if he continued to mow, I think he would be surprised.
Yeah,
the NRCS depends on the species. I would certainly pursue that.
And the NRCS, I'm trying to remember the exact.
Isn't it Natural Resource Conservation Service?
Yeah,
and
Natural
Resource. And I went to Neil up at Prairie Nursery. So he provided all the seed and gave me some very wise advice on how to proceed. That's an answer in response to your previous caller.
Well, that's
Thank
great,
you.
Dave.
Thank you so much.
That is really, and for others, I mean, there are other people listening as well that I'm pretty sure the NRCS offices will be getting a little more business next week, maybe.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep, goodbye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Yeah, it's, you know, sometimes when we mention something, bulletins or something, or see your county office, I'll sometimes get notes from people from the county offices saying, why didn't you tell me you were going to do that? I got a bunch of calls about it. They didn't know. Oh, man. Darla in Minneapolis, your turn. Hi, Darla.
Hi. Thank you to you both for taking my phone call. I wanted to ask you about large-scale, several acres, production of milkweed, if that's possible, to help with monarch butterfly population. And I'm looking at 2 questions for you. One would be the planting pattern, if I should keep them in a patch, or in an ideal situation, if I could maybe do it vineyard style with rows so that I could easily harvest the milkweed pods. And then secondly, if you have any ideas on how I could go from milkweed pod and have a better opportunity to get really flourishing plants from that, if I need to add anything into the soil or do anything special.
Milkweeds are pretty pretty tough plants.
Yeah, they're pretty hardy.
And it depends on the species that you were going to use. If you were going to use our native butterfly weed, which has the orange flowers, that one, although there are some ecotypes that will handle heavy clay soil, they prefer better drainage. If you were going to use swamp milkweed, which also is a great butterfly plant, that one will handle heavier soil and wetter conditions. And then there's the common milkweed. Now, that one is definitely not going to stay in a patch because it has a rhizomatous root system, and it will pop up in many different places. The others grow more in a clump. What you might want to do is Google Monarch Watch, and what they are doing is promoting the growing of milkweed.
Yes.
To help monarchs. So you may want to just look into that to see whether they have any pointers for you.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Oh, I will do so. Thanks so much. I'm hoping to get 3 or 4 acres turned over to milkweed this year.
Wow.
So.
Oh, that's a lot of milkweed.
You bet it is.
I'm thinking, you know, maybe a couple of the ones you mentioned might be, rather than just have one type.
Yeah, I would recommend a diversity. Because it's not only monarchs that feed on milkweeds. There are other pollinators as well. Although, you know, we certainly do want to encourage the monarchs with habitat loss and so on. So that's a great project.
Yeah, wonderful.
I was wondering about a vineyard style, if I could maybe alternate species, or if you just think that would be an impossibility from the get-go.
I think that would be really hard to maintain. But you might want to include some other flowers nearby, because although the caterpillars feed on the milkweeds, the adults prefer a diversity of flower nectar sources, and that will also help out other pollinators as well. So you might
I'm planning on doing this in my apple orchard all the way around it. So I think this might be a good fix. But thank you so much. Do you think just this and I'll look at Monarch Watch?
I think that would probably work.
And for sure, Darla, when you get this going, give us a call and see how so we can see how things are going.
Yeah.
I'd love to see a photo.
A photo would be great.
Oh, I hope one day to be swapping milkweed pod seeds with everyone and trying to get into the backyard gardening. Thank you so much, you both. It's so appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking all things in the garden today with our guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio on this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. The Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly love to hear from you. Kurt in La Crosse has something for us. Hi, Kurt. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call, by golly. It's nice to talk with you, Larry and Lisa. I have a couple of, I talked to your screener, and I have a couple of raised bed gardens in front of my house, southern exposure. I filled them up with compost from the local landfill, but last year I amended them with some cow manure and horse manure that my wife gave me for my birthday present, for criminy sakes. Because she says I'm full of, that. And my vegetables grew like crazy last year, and I was wondering if I should amend it again this year. However, I cannot get any onions to grow.
Hmm. That's weird.
Okay.
Everything else grows.
Yeah.
Are you growing?
I put the sets in, and they don't get much bigger than the sets. I get wonderful, wonderful plumage from them, which I use anyway for my cooking because I love to cook, but no bulbs.
Okay, that may be, it might be too much nitrogen then, yep. if you're getting really good leaf growth but no bulbing going on. Usually composted manure is not that high in nitrogen. I mean, it has nitrogen, it has a lot of other of the macro and micronutrients that are needed. Chicken manure, on the other hand, can be much higher in nitrogen.
Well, that's very high nitrogen.
Yeah. but that would be my guess, is they also need some micronutrients that include manganese and copper and zinc. So you might want to get a soil test done and see if that perhaps is your issue as well.
There you go.
I grow herbs of every kind. Mm-hmm. They went gangbusters. My tomatoes were just phenomenal. The kohlrabis turned out they like grew into softball size like overnight.
Yeah,
it was just amazing how fast the garden grew.
Composted manure can be great stuff, but there are some plants that prefer less nitrogen than others.
And onions might fall in that category. So something to think about, Kurt. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call.
One other question, if I could, please.
Okay.
My neighbor has yucca plants that have grown there forever, and they're right on an alley, and I took some seeds out of there. Are they able to germinate?
Hmm. I don't know. I think they are, I would assume so, but I would have to check that out, exactly what kind of regime they need, or whether you can just kind of plant them and they do okay, or whether they need a cold period, or what the story is with those.
That one I don't recall ever having that question before.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the time people are wanting to know how to kill their yuccas.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll still get somebody calling in with a comment on that.
Yeah.
And so... hang in there. Stay listening, Kurt. And You know, we haven't mentioned it yet, but this weekend, on Saturday, as a matter of fact, well, the whole weekend is Garden Expo.
Today.
Saturday and Sunday is Garden Expo, and we are, you and I and Brian Huddleston will be Saturday morning, 9:30 to 10:30. We are giving away fabulous prizes. I've already, the prizes are on their way over there as we speak.
Ooh.
And so we're going to have drawings during the time. And, of course, you and Brian are going to answer all the questions. And I will serve as the moderator.
You have a lot of knowledge, Larry. I've heard you answer some questions.
Once in a while, I'll throw in a question or two. But I'm really looking forward to 9:30 on Saturday for that.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And Matthew and Racine, it's your turn. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, what's on your mind?
Well, I know you were talking a little bit about manure and manure last week, and I have quails and want to get chickens. Should I go and have a separate compost pile for my quail manure, or should I put it straight into my vegetable garden, or should I just scatter it in my prairie field?
You should always compost your manure first in case there are any pathogens in there, and particularly with like chicken manure that's a little too high in nitrogen to use fresh. We never recommend using fresh manure. I would say you could definitely mix the two. That's not an issue, but it should be composted before you use it.
All right, and I heard them talking about the horse manure and how his garden grew like bananas for his vegetables. I should give me some of that as well.
Yeah. Horse manure is great stuff.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff. And often used in mushroom growing, too.
If I'm
not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
Although I once got a book on mushroom growing, and the recommendation was elephant manure, and I didn't have it. I didn't have a ready source.
No.
Elephant manure,
that.
So I thought, well, I think I'll take a pass on that. But the horse manure, there is that possibility. But once again, you want to have that
composted.
So there you go, Matthew. Thanks a lot for calling. Dan in Duluth, Minnesota, it is your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Good morning. I guess it's technically
good morning.
Morning.
Yeah.
Quick question. I was wondering, is there any point in trying to save seeds from produce? I'm thinking cantaloupe especially, and if so, what's the best way to prepare that maybe for the next season to start the seeds?
I think it probably would be better if you were going to save seeds that you save them. Well, first of all, with melons, they are pollinated, they're open pollinated in such a way that usually if you try and grow them from seed where the pollination has not been controlled, you're going to end up with something that probably isn't very edible. So melons, squash, pumpkins. Now, when you buy seed, the pollination has been very strictly controlled so that you're going to get something that is edible. But I remember Karen Delahoe, our Fresh Market specialist, saying that often if you don't control the pollination and you save melon or squash seeds, that you'll get something that looks like it was the plant from outer space. So,
yeah, kind of cool.
Yeah, right. But it takes something like 12 visits from a bee to get a squash pollinated, and the pollen comes from so many different squash sources that it just... I wouldn't recommend it. I don't think it's probably worth your time. And you don't know where those plants were grown. They may not be the best ones for Wisconsin, particularly cantaloupe, which is a long season plant. We have a hard time here because our season is too short. So you want to buy seeds that are produced for the Wisconsin area for those types of plants.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll ignore the cheapskate in me and buy seeds, I guess.
You know what? You should try one hill.
just for the heck of it.
Just try one hill for the heck. If you've got the room, right, Dan, go ahead, try one hill and see what you get.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, if you've got the room, it'd be kind of fun to see what.
Yeah,
you know.
You'd probably just have a long vine with it.
Yeah, you might. But you might get something.
You
that
might.
Looks kind of cool. Oh, man. What about the cost and process for soil testing for garden plots? Facebook question from Denise. And it's a pretty simple process, is it not?
Yeah, the Marshfield Soil Lab, you can send in your samples. It's $15 or $20. What you do is you fill out a form. You can get that online or you can have it mailed to you. And the form will tell you, you know, or will ask you what kind of crop you're growing, and then they will give you specific recommendations based on that crop. So whether you're growing turf or you're growing vegetables or you're growing fruits or perennials, they'll give you a recommendation, and they'll tell you what you have in your soil already, what the texture is, whether you need to amend it with manure or other kinds of soil amendments. It's a really worthwhile thing to do.
Yeah, it's really worth the money. And if you just go online to Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory in Wisconsin.
Or UW Soil Lab.
UW Soil Lab. You are definitely. And we have the Marshfield, and Madison still has.
The Madison Clinic is, or the Madison Lab is closing in November.
Okay. So the Marshfield. One will be going on for hopefully a while.
Hopefully a long time. Yeah, I'm really sad to lose the Madison lab.
Yeah, that is too bad. Well, we've got Garden Expo coming up this weekend. We'll be there and giving some presentations. Elisa and I and Brian Huddleston will be around on Saturday morning from 9:30 to 10:30. Looking forward to that and giving away, as I said, fabulous prizes, a veritable cornucopia of books of some with and some garden. Some are garden and some are cooking. So cooking, preparing what you grow in the garden. So we are really looking forward to that. Lisa Johnson, our guest today. Lisa, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at the garden today. It can be a real pleasure, can it? Think about gardening and tell you what, with the Garden Expo this weekend, oh man, I tell you, if you haven't been there, you should go, really. It is so much fun. And it's, you know, it can be miserable outside, but you go in there and it's like spring has sprung.
Oh, yeah.
And summer has... spring and summer are there. And as a matter of fact, our friends over at Wisconsin Public Television are giving away 10 pairs of tickets to this weekend's Garden Expo. So they're good for one day's admission, your choice of Saturday or Sunday. And the winners' names will be at the will call window. So you don't have to worry about getting them from us. You just go to the event, go to the will call window, give your name, and you'll get the tickets. And we'll give you, all right, it is now 7 minutes after the hour. We are going to give you 5 minutes to enter. You can send an email at WPR.org, or you can phone 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email at talk@WPR.org. We need your first and last names for the list and a phone number so we can call to let you know that you won. If you're emailing, also include the city or town where you live. Now, there's ways to do this. Believe it or not, we can do a random drawing. Judith can do a random drawing of all of the entries at the end of 5 minutes. So, guess what? Better call right now or go online. You got 5 minutes. And it's about seven after, so probably about 12 after, thereabouts. That is when we're over. Maybe 12 and a half after. All right? And in the meantime, all the phone lines are going to be flooded, so we won't have any questions from listeners. However, we've got some other things that we can talk about. Certainly, I want to mention 9:30 to 10:30 Saturday morning. You and I are on with Brian Huddleston, and I have no idea where we'll be at the event. But
I know they gave us the big room.
They gave us the big room because we always have a big crowd. Mm-hmm. And I've got a whole bunch of prizes. And, you know, when you get there, you sign your name in, and we just draw them out of the hat. We're not saving those names or anything, so you're not going to get flooded later with whatever.
Yeah.
It's just to give you some gifts. And
last year they were so cool. I mean, there were just wonderful books. And
yeah. And they are again this year, too. There's one on slugs that had a really cool title. I forget what it was now.
I can hardly wait to see that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Something about this. Well, I'm not even going to try. We'll have it for those of you who arrive tomorrow morning at 9. Get there at 9:30 for the start of it, and it's really only an hour. Actually, probably about, isn't it usually like 50 minutes, mm-hmm. because they want us done 10 minutes early to get
the
out
next speaker
for the
in
next
and,
speaker, and yeah. you're on. You're on again, aren't you?
Yeah, I have a talk on perennials, and I also have a talk on organic techniques for the garden. So I have one talk on Saturday and one talk on Sunday.
And Brian Huddleston, who will be with us, may have a presentation.
Yeah,
he's got some as well. And, of course, all our extension types are, you know,
yep.
so many of them are right there in their own booth area mm-hmm. to answer your questions individually. So Brian will be there. You may or may not be there.
No, I'll be there. In between presentations,
you'll be there to meet and greet and answer questions. So it's really, and it smells so good there, and it's so much fun. And I always spend more money than I need to spend.
Yeah, that's one of the dangers, isn't it?
It's one of the dangers, but it's a whole lot of fun. So I'm hoping Saturday morning, 9:30, and see a lot of you there. I'll be there with my Wisconsin Public Radio shirt on. And tell you what, it's going to be a lot of fun. We had a Facebook question from Karen, who said the bark on her apple tree and the branches turned black last summer. Does this indicate my tree is diseased or dying?
Yeah, it could. I know there is a, there are a couple of different things. It could be something that is not a huge issue. If you had a lot of aphids, for example, the honeydew that they produce as they imbibe plant sap and then excrete it is a very good substrate for a fungus called sooty mold to grow on. And so yeah. sometimes trees that have a lot of aphids on them, and fruit trees might be one of them, or scales or other sucking insects that produce that kind of thing. So it could be sooty mold that is growing on the bark, but it could also be something that is more of a serious problem like fire blight. And fire blight is a bacterial disease that causes cankers and whole areas of branches and twigs can die back and turn black. So what you might want to do is send in a sample to our friend Brian at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and when your tree leafs out in the spring, and see if you can get a better read on that. But I know there is also another fungal disease that grows on the bark that can be a big problem.
And I should say that I believe we are done with the contest. The contest is 12 after, isn't it? We've been 5 minutes. Yeah, it's been
It is
past the time. So if you've been calling in to get involved in the contest, it's over. It's over.
Aww.
Yeah, but Judith's going to be working on getting it taken care of. So don't worry, we're all done with the contest. And we'll be reading the names of the people, by the way, who are the winners and where you're from. So she'll get that done in the next 10 minutes for sure. So there you go. We have Another call, Bob wondered if it's okay to get compost from municipal sources. Is it safe? What's it usually made from?
Well, compost from municipal sources is typically made out of leaf litter. Usually it's not something like sewage unless you're talking about a product like Milorganite, which is produced in Milwaukee, that they use their city sewage to create that product. But most of the time it is leaf and twig material that has been collected through the yard waste program. Now, there can be problems with it. If there's a lot of walnut wood in it or walnut leaves, and walnuts excrete from their root system, but also there's some present in the leaves and the twigs and the nut hulls, a chemical that's called juglone that is inhibitive to the growth of plants like tomatoes and lilacs and many other plants. So that can be a problem. It also can be a problem if they've used any diseased trees that had verticillium wilt, yep. For example. You can transmit that. Brian did some studies to see how long that was viable in, mostly you're going to find that in city mulch. Most of the, and I differentiate that from compost. Compost right. is more of the leaves. It's possible, though, again, that if it hasn't been composted properly or long enough, that there may be some issues with it. It's really nice when you can make your own because you know exactly what's gone into it.
Yep, absolutely. So a good question, though. And
yeah.
Appreciate it. Now, just to mention again, our contest is over, so don't call in for the contest. If you have a question for us, by all means, call at 1-800-642-1234. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And, excuse me, we have other questions, and I thought I had one more question up on our Facebook page, but I'm not seeing it right now, so we'll... I've got some more questions of my own. What are you getting, by the way? Are you getting questions right now, and what are they about?
We do still get questions during the winter months, and they run the gamut. We have people that have pruning questions,
yeah.
And usually I tell them, yes, this is a great time of year to be pruning. But we also, I've been getting a few questions this year wondering about winter burn possibilities this next spring. I've been getting questions about things that can be planted next spring. Had some calls about weed problems that people are looking to deal with in a different way this next year. Some calls about emerald ash borer, which is a problem here in the Dane County area, and what to do with ash trees. And
so the whole gamut.
All kinds of things, yeah.
I did not mention this earlier, and I certainly want to bring it up. Shelley, of course, so sadly passed away way before her time, and our Wisconsin gardener. And there is a kind of I wouldn't say fun. Well, it is kind of fun in a way.
It was nice to see.
A retrospective on Shelley.
Yeah, nice tribute.
A nice tribute is the proper word. And thank you. And I know you and Brian are going to be there. That tribute it's a video and will be played on both Saturday and Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Some of the crew who worked with Shelley are going to be there. Some of the former guests like Brian and myself will be there. It'll be a great time for us to share memories of working with Shelley, and for people who didn't catch the show when it was broadcast, to see that and share some of your memories. We'll have cards there if you would like to say some great things about Shelley for her family.
That'd be wonderful.
We all miss her.
Yeah, I sure do.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind when you get there. There's a you'll get a program, and in the I know it's in the program.
Yes.
So the specific times and everything will be in the program.
Right.
Jennifer in Reedsburg has a question. Hi, Jen.
Hi, yes, I had a question. I have a vegetable garden, and I put in squash every year, and I do rotate. I rotate the garden. I have like a chart that I rotate it every 4 years.
Good for you.
But every time that I put in the squash, every year, no matter what, every year I get squash mites. But and I try and do organic gardening as well, and I try and use diatomaceous earth every time I see them. I spread the diatomaceous earth to try and get rid of them that way, but that doesn't seem to work very well.
No.
Is there some other way that I can try and get rid of them?
Well, first of all, let me make sure that I know what you're referring to by mites. What do they look like?
They're little and I don't know how to explain them. They're kind of
like black or grayish.
Grayish black.
Okay. How big are they?
Are they like the period of a sentence?
Yeah.
Okay. So really small, and they're on the underside of the leaf. And
yes,
do
yes.
they create webbing? Or a little bit of webbing, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that does sound like mites. You can try neem oil. That's NEEM, 70% neem oil, which is an organic product that you can spray on the underside of the leaves. But before you even try that, you might want to just try a good strong spray of water on the underside of the leaves. Anything to dislodge those little guys, particularly they like hot, dry weather. But neem or the water might be some good organic products that you could try. Now, either one of them you're going to need to apply more than once. And I know with squash being as big as they are that it's not going to be fun to try and do that. But the diatomaceous earth doesn't stick well enough really to do what it needs to do, whereas the neem will kind of coat and suffocate the critters. So I would try that.
And the neem, that's still kind of an organic type thing?
Yeah, it's from the neem tree, which I'm trying to remember. It's a tropical plant, and it is used in organic production.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You know, the other day, diatomaceous earth came up on the program, mm-hmm. and it was someone called and said, I think they had some sort of tapeworm or something. They were actually ingesting diatomaceous earth, and I said, oh my God, I wouldn't do that. But I had many irate people afterwards say, oh, there is a human form of it.
I wouldn't be surprised, because it used to be used in toothpaste as the granular type of thing.
So I want to take back what I said. And
there's always something new out there to keep up
and
with.
Yeah, this is actually something old that's been around forever.
Yeah, and I didn't know that either.
I just didn't know it. And my first instinct was to say, well, I'm not going to
use it.
But many people, believe me, many people emailed to say, you dummy, I've been taking it forever and I'm, you know, whatever. So
interesting.
I wanted to pass that on. We have, and I should do this right now while I'm thinking about it, we have our winners. And so, Judith, you got them all up? She might have them all up. It looks like they're all there. Bridette, here are the winners. Oh, Monique in Reedstown, Monique H., Reedstown. Bridette, or maybe it's Bridget, K in Sparta, Liz H in Pewaukee, Edward A in Kenosha County, Perry S in Bayfield, coming from a long ways away there, good to have tickets, John C in Appleton, from Oshkosh, Linda B, from Fitchburg, Melinda D, and from Baraboo, Geneva J, and then there's an Eden A. We're not quite sure, but there's probably aren't that many Eden A's who we don't have a town, but you know what? Judith did a bang up job to get all that done, and believe
five
me,
minutes.
You can
wow.
imagine you can imagine how many she had to kind of record and then do the whatever it is that she does
she's
to make
awesome.
It awesome. Yeah, she does a she's a very 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 good person to have around. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that for free. Let's go to Alice in Gays Mills next. Alice, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I heard you mention scale insects earlier on an orchard question, and I have a real problem, long-term problem, and I have been intimate with this plant trying to get rid of the scale, and I was hoping you could give me a good clue as to how to eradicate it and have it never come back. But this is a houseplant, a tree, Ficus benjamina.
I put it outdoors.
It's in a very large pot. I put it outdoors in the summer for a little while, but I have to keep it out of the sun, the bright sun, because
right.
then it
It'll
scorches
burn.
The leaves. And indoors, I have it in a southwest window. I've had this little tree for many years. I've pruned it back some to keep it from being too tall and too broad. But in several years now, it has had scale. I'm intimate with this plant. I examine it. I remove scale from the backs of the leaves and the leaf stems and everywhere I find it. But it creates, like you said, all this stickiness from
yes.
sucking the sap, and so my floors are sticky around
yep.
it.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm hoping that you have some relatively. I've sprayed it with dish detergent water when it's outdoors. Seriously, but that doesn't do it.
That doesn't do anything.
No, I would try the neem oil again.
Really?
Because yeah, neem it's an oil that coats and it can suffocate the scales. A lot
uh-huh.
of the insecticides just kind of roll off of the backs of those little guys because they're pretty waxy. But the neem being an oil. Can help. Now, as with most of these products, you need to spray more than once, and
mm-hmm.
because particularly when the young crawlers are out, and those guys are hard to see because they're very small. But yeah, I would definitely try that. Now, unfortunately, as you probably know, having Ficus benjamina, that it often reacts poorly to change by dropping its leaves. That's
yep.
why I say it's called weeping fig, is that it weeps leaves mm-hmm. all over at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
So I would maybe try it on a branch or two first and see how it reacts before you spray the whole tree.
And I'll need to do that outdoors when I'm taking it out, right?
Yeah, and concentrate on the undersides of the leaves and
right.
do it a few times. What I would do is I would not spray it right away when you take it out. Let it,
okay.
you know, let it get acclimated to being outside again and then spray it. You know, it's too bad that a lot of times taking a house plant outside that has, say, mealybugs or white flies, a lot of times beneficial insects
will take
care of the problem. But with scales, unfortunately, that doesn't always seem to happen.
Yeah. Now, you said spray it several times. What kind of interval between?
About 5 to 7 days. So I would spray it, say, you know, 2 to 3 times, and then spray it again before you take it inside for the winter.
And
monitor it during the summer to make sure it's not getting reinfected.
You could still apply it in the inside, though, couldn't you?
Yeah, you certainly could, because it's an organic product. If you want it, if your garage is heated, you know, you could spray it in there.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, maybe that's worth considering.
Well, I would definitely...
It's taken up by the car, so the car has to go out if I want to put a tree in there. So I don't know if I could do it in the garage in the winter, but...
Yeah, and if your garage is not heated, I would not do that during the winter, because that will undoubtedly cause your tree to drop some leaves.
I wouldn't mind doing it in the house. I mean, I'd
yeah,
put
you can
some
do it in the bathtub or something.
Yeah, do it in the bathtub or put some newspapers down and
yeah, still put newspapers down.
Yeah,
in the
put
bathtub.
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's a very good point. Oh my goodness, we're out of time.
Ah!
Lisa, always a pleasure. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Okay, great.
Come to Garden Expo. Lisa Johnson and I and Brian Huddleston will be there at 9:30. We'll be starting, and you'll have a chance to win fabulous prizes and get your questions answered. Oh, in the meantime, it's always fun. Monday, we're physical therapist Bill and Lori will join us. But we're going to be having a lot of fun at Garden Expo, and I hope you come and have some fun with us. Stay with us now on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.